Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, the our delegation this afternoon is myself and Sir Mark Albertine. Mark is our Chief Financial Officer, and he will talk about the budget. I will speak to about the strategic plan that was developed. Chair, also we in thinking through the presentation there are a few gremlins that stepped in, and I just want to, alert members to fix that on page number 20 and 25. Our program is divided into four programs. And on page 20 it says program 2 and 3 under recognition and administration is actually just program number 2. And in the next one, program 4 should then become program 3, the National Learning Database. And on the next page, it's under Program 5, which is actually be Program 4. So that is on slide 21. And then on page 26, we've got our medium-term expenditure estimate under 2012 to 2013. Well, if I can ask if you,
Why don't you go through it, then you'll just
highlight that. Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. You requested that I need to gallop through. So in terms of the context, I think the important context when we developed the strategic plan was the fact that there was a new government, a new cabinet installed, and that the announcement was then made that there will be two departments of education, one for basic education and the other one for higher education and training. And also that the NPF Act, the new NPF Act, will be implemented from 2009. So those were, you know, kind of key, issues in the context. We also, in planning, were saying that given the new NPF Act, that it will take some time for that NPF Act to be implemented. And then, you know, the assumption that there will still be a transitional period for the next 12 to 18 months. Perhaps the only point I want to make on this slide, your point is, is that there was also, the kind of indication that a new structural authority will be appointed. In fact, the decision now is being left in the current authority will sit out its period. And in October this year, the change will then be effective, where the board size will be shifted from 29 members to 16 members, in line with the new act. The vision, I'm not going to go into detail, as you say, as well. Our mission is to ensure the further development and implementation of a qualification framework and advance its objectives. Which contributes to the full development of each learner and to the social economic development of the nation as a whole. That is our mission. The objective of the NPF is still the same, and that is about creating a national integrated framework to facilitate access and mobility and progression, enhance quality, accelerate redress, and then contribute to the full personal development of each learner and the social economic development of the nation. So that has remained the same. Chairperson, we also, on an annual basis, developed a set of strategic imperatives. Our board met in March this year to review the strategic imperatives given the context. And what the board has decided, in fact, in that strategic imperatives for 2010-11 and 2011-12 will be in advancing the NPF objective, SACPA should embrace diversity and environmental stability and social justice. So that these strategic imperatives are based on our understanding that the NPF has a framework for communication, coordination and collaboration across education, training, development and work. And Chairperson, we have actually made a presentation to the portfolio committee last year, where we explain, what is underlying, this conception of the NPF. So SACPA then, as the oversight body for the NPF and the custodian of its values, will continue to manage the transition and future operations. That comes back to the assumption that you made earlier, with NPF partners, and these NPF partners will include the Quality Council, the MALUSI, the CHE, and the Quality Council for Training Occupation to ensure effectiveness and to advance and to the advantage of learners and especially those in poor and rural communities, as a kind of resource. We also would like to continue to build the research and development capacity and capability, including information systems, international networks, and research into work and learning, and to lead policy debate, legislative and conceptual debate on key national priorities and to impact on practice. Thirdly, to advance lifelong learning through the NQF and mechanisms such as educational style learning, credit accumulation and transfer, and career advice services towards enabling the removal of systemic barriers to access and progression. We're very aware of the fact that in terms of the kind of situation, there are a number of barriers and so on that we would like to focus on. also engage proactively with key partners to develop a common understanding of what does it mean to get into it as a framework of communication, coordination, and collaboration across the sectors of education, training, development, and work, and translate it into practice. To create a climate and conditions for effectiveness and advocacy and excellent service delivery to the public in the new interest environment as defined by the interest. So that broadly, is informing us, as we move forward in terms of this year, but also, in terms of next year. Now, if we then go to specifically the strategic plan, that I'm sure, members received a copy of that, the detailed plan, that it is based then on the understanding of the interpersonal framework for communication, collaboration, and coordination. It is also based on the idea that we would like to foster a culture of lifelong learning, that it should be learner-centric, and it is based, on the NQF Act. The assumption is that SACO will continue to be recognized by government, key partners, and stakeholders as the oversight and leadership body of the NQF and the guardian of its values. And a very important assumption here, Chair, is that, the handing over functions to the QCs will happen during 2009-10 and the QCO from the 1st of April. Now, the QCO was launched in February this year. Chair, and, at the moment there is a discussion between us and the QCO in terms of what are the kind of functions that we need to continue to assist them, to come on board. So there is a discussion in terms of a phase-in, phase-out process happening. Also, the SACO will be sufficiently, will have sufficient financial support to deliver on its mandate. The key risks that we are trying to address in the plan is that there may be different interpretations of the new legislation and such as role in the interim architecture, as well as the transitional arrangement. As it were. Also, that there may be a lack of resources, including funding. And then, of course, there's a number of management and operational challenges, in fact, as well as staff challenges that we have outlined in the plan. The strategic overall objective is in line with the new NQF Act, and it is to coordinate the work of partners to support conferences, education, training, and development communities. And then the registration of qualifications and past qualifications. As members will recall, that the functions of standard setting and quality assurance, the executive functions have been moved to the Quality Council in terms of the new Act. Also, a new mandate in terms of the NQF Act is that we need to recognize professional bodies and register professional designations on the NQF. And that is, a new function that we are busy developing. That we will initiate projects to monitor and evaluate education training for continuous systemic quality improvement, through our research function. And then maintain and further develop the National Learning Sector Database as a key national source of information. And we made a presentation to the portfolio committee last year in terms of the detail around the NLP. Also advise the ministers and policymakers, conduct research and public support. The NQF Act also gives us the responsibility to communicate to the public as a whole about the NQF. The NQF advocacy is quite critical, that our international collaboration will be with similar other organizations like SACWA around NQF methods specifically. And then that we will evaluate and advise on foreign qualifications as well as good governance and development of people. So those are the overall objectives that the strategic plan is based on. So the core sector then is to develop and sustain policies and procedures and infrastructure for the NQF, actively supported by key stakeholders in education and training. Chair, what I want to do is to do a summary of some of the key deliverables, that we've reached, for the next financial year. And then after that, hand over to Mark Albertine, that will then speak about the budget and then more, a little bit more in depth about the plan. So this is the kind of thing that, from the deliverables perspective. We understand that the definition of prior learning is quite a critical one. And in actual fact, one of the things that we recognize is that in terms of moving forward around the definition of prior learning, it's quite important that a body takes the lead in terms of organizing, you know, a national strategy and a robust plan. And so one of the things that we have to forward is, you know, the development of a national strategy to bring together all the different role players, you know, and develop a plan so that we can actually raise the profile of recognition of prior learning. The chairperson, if you can remember, when we made a presentation to the portfolio committee last year, we were saying that this is, you know, one of those unfunded mandates, and we also outlined a number of key systemic problems, in fact, that we've identified. We have interacted with the Ministry of Education and the Minister, in actual fact, was saying that, you know, this, you know, he actually endorses the national strategy. So that is what we would like to, you know, embark on in the next financial year. Also to establish SACPA as a nodal point to support practical delivery of the service. So we have set up a helpline where people can phone in. And in fact, at the moment, in terms of the helpline, there's about 70% of the call that comes in is, you know, from people that have got difficulty in service. So we are addressing that. And it's, but the point here is that we would like to expand that. There's a whole range of, you know, of issues that, you know, that people do raise. Let me take one example. You know, the policy generally that because RPR is something that gets implemented by providers. Providers often, you know, take the view that from a funding perspective, you know, that they're looking at the policy of competency. You know, how many people can we get in, and that there are particular costs associated with that. Now, if, for example, we are saying that somebody can do, you know, can obtain the qualification by recognition of prior learning, then there's the issue about, how much, what's the cost of that would be. So what I'm saying that we've outlined in fact the previous time as a kind of feature that needs to be addressed. Also, Chair, the career advice services, we are busy and looking at developing a comprehensive national strategy around that. Various bodies have got different mandates in terms of this, and again, in discussion with the Minister of Education and Training, we were suggesting that SACPA should take the lead in terms of bringing this together in terms of a comprehensive national strategy. Also, that we have been piloting a career advice help desk, and that in fact, that we actually again, you know, bring that to full functionality and to be able to handle at least about 80% of the data. The third aspect from a delivery perspective is that the NQF advocacy campaign aims at building public awareness of the NQF and its benefits. In particular, Chair, given the new NQF Act, that the general public should know and understand, you know, what. You know, what is it that one can expect, in fact, that this national advocacy campaign be rolled out in partnership with the PUC and the Department of Higher Education and Training, and that should include, you know, radio, exhibitions, print media, and a series of seminars, you know, aimed at the kind of broader sector. Also to leverage, you know, public relations to raise awareness about the interest and to develop a whole number of brand ambassadors, where people can, you know, promote the, you know, the interest of the program. Chairperson, in terms of program two, the recognition and registration, as I already indicated, one of the new functions is the recognition of professional bodies and the registration of professional designation. And we actually need to develop the criteria for the registration through a process of consultation. And there's a whole, you know, consultation process that takes place so that we can move towards criteria and guidelines for the recognition of professional bodies. And then also to commence, you know, with the registration process of, you know, of professional recognition. I'll come back to you with that. In terms of the National Learner Vector Database, it is populating and positioning the NLD. In particular, the, you know, we've been asked by the Department of Public Service Administration to verify qualifications of people in the public service, and we are doing that. However, there are gaps, in terms of the information, particularly historical records, and so it's to develop a strategy now to try to digitize those historical records and bring it all on board, onto the NLP, so that we can provide a full verification service. Then in terms of program 4, in terms of foreign qualifications, evaluation and advisory services, we are in the process of restructuring the that particular service so that it can come in line with best practice, so that it can produce a number of world-class intellectual products. For example, a world-class database that compares qualifications across education and training systems within the continent, but also globally. And then I think a new thing that we're developing is where federal partners and other people can ask us for the authentication of certificates that is submitted for evaluation. Is another new area that we need to develop. Chairperson Mark just reminded me again about the gremlins, one of the gremlins. As I was going through the process, in fact, you would see on that on the presentation that was handed out, program 2 here, it actually says program 2 and 3 on the paper, and it should just be program 2. Then the NLRB is program 3 and not program 4. And then program 5, which is the foreign qualifications, evaluation and advisory services, that should be in program 4. Okay, I'm going to stop there, and then I'm going to ask Mark to deal with the budget issue.
Thank you. Thanks for that.
Thanks very much, Chair. I will be very brief. Obviously, one of the important things with any budget is obviously the assumptions on which it's based. And they are all there. There are 10 budget assumptions. I'm not going to read them. I think the key one, which Mr. Samuels highlighted earlier, that it's on track with a new mandate in terms of the new NQF Act, effective 1 June. I think number 4 is that we project additional revenue of about 2 million due to the DPSA Directive Concerning Government Department Verification. I think then on the next slide, number 7, the funding from government will be at least 41.3 million. Then we have mentioned that, and that's one of the risks in terms of number 8 and 9, we talk about looking for additional funding for clearly defined and discrete projects, the one being the career advice services. And you will see that number 10, we have 43 new positions were created. And effectively, this was some of the temp and contract positions in our evaluation of foreign qualifications. And moving on to the next slide, Chair, in terms of our revenue, you'll see that the government funding is 41.3 million. This is a 5.7% increase on the prior year. The non-tax revenue of 28 million, the majority of that is the evaluation of foreign qualifications, the revenue that we get from there, and also the verification income. Chair, then the next slide, if we look at our expenditure, just one more thing, sorry, Chair, every year we do submit in terms of our plan a scenario 1, 2, and 3 budget. And how we do is our scenario 1 budget is really our ideal what we would like to have. Then moving down, we do some budget cuts to get to scenario 2, and our scenario 3 would be a fully balanced and funded budget. And, so that talks to our assumption that there's some stuff we'd ideally like to do, but we don't necessarily have the funding to do it. Then, Chair, just on this slide, sorry for the typo, but on the last column, 2012-13, the total there in your handout says 67,515, and it should be 77,253,910. Apologies. Then the next slide shows then the... that was the previous slide in terms of income. Yes, that slide there.
Now,
That's the revenue, the first slide, the medium-term revenue estimate. Just the last column, the 2012-13.
The
right at the bottom, the total revenue. 2573 I've talked to the expenditure. In terms of expenditure, you'll see compensation employees at 46 million, goods and service 21. One of the assumptions that there's broadbanding for all of the staff that we will implement. Then the next slide shows our capital expenditure in terms of property, plant, and equipment, 1.5. That covers all the computer expenditure, the building expenditure, and furniture and equipment. Then, Chair, moving into the next slide.
Can I just, you're spending 80% of your revenue on property.
Part of it is also included in that compensation we employees. There is some staff training of about R1 million that's included in there as well. Then, having a look at the program budget analysis, we talked to the program, just briefly outlined some of the major objectives which we hope to achieve. Now, Program 1, Admin and Support, it does show 42 million, which does show a bit of a disproportionate figure. But we highlight that some of the newer initiatives we do include in there, for instance, the career advice services, the NQF advocacy, and the work done by the executive office in terms of RPL, etc. I think just an asterisk there in Program 2. In terms of the QCTO, the budget was drawn up on the basis that the QCPO would be operational from 1 April. Now, we clearly highlighted in our scenario, should SACWA continue to do some of the work of the standard setting and quality assurance function, there would be extra 6.45 million needed. And in the past, how we raised that is we entered into joint implementation plans with the CTIS to generate those qualifications. Chair, in the next couple of slides, is just really more the detail around the different programs. Would you like me to, is that okay, Chair?
Thank you, Mark. And again, Andrew Radashin, Deputy CEO, we wanted to apologize, but understanding that we didn't rush through any trust report, we didn't rush through high education graphics. It is not just the Department of Higher Education and Training. So it must be some form of assurance that we feel that currently SACWA is functioning in the way it is supposed to be. And I think that message we want to be conveyed. Unless I'm obviously wrong, then names or something present in my perspective, and it's possibly wrong to present it out. But, however, then there is a few details. One, I think so even SACWA members were affected by the reposition, therefore there is still a transitional period. And hence the risk analysis, and that's really what we appreciate. What is the strategic issue that will not get us to what our strategic plan is saying? That is the type of quality analysis. That's the stuff that you ask yourself and other structures. You come in and say, these are the assumptions. You can do the following, but these are the assumptions that underpin by it, and these are the risk factors by underpin by it. And good to know that SACWA is a quality assured as well. So just want to make that point. However, you did come here last year on RPL. You gave us the document. I don't see what's different between what you said then and what you're saying today. We are still putting a strategy together. Now, I don't necessarily want to understand that that's a very serious issue for us. How do we accelerate in the existing transition environment on this issue without making mistakes? That's the question. Are we at the highest base currently of our possible intervention, and therefore we can't do more? Or are we at our lowest base and also not doing anything else because the transitional period is around? And but we should actually be a little bit further. How do we up the stakes on RPL in the existing environment? That's the question. Now, not something necessary to elaborate, because that's not something that I am concerned about. The second one is something that we've raised with the department, and the minister will make announcements in that regard hopefully tomorrow. We did indicate, I think, in the department presentation that in the stress plan around career guidance information center and career information system, it is just not good enough for us to have a plan at the end, to develop a plan at the end of the financial year 2010-2011. We should actually implement the plan in this financial year. I think SACWA has done a lot of work in that regard, and we will hear from the minister tomorrow, and somehow I know there is positive things developing, meaning the kind of serious issues raised in the committee was taken into account. So also, what you are presenting, I think we want to affirm that point, but also saying that it needs to evolve now from, are we running pilots that it's a very low level, but the impact is so big? You understand the current problem is so big, and we're playing on the edges. That's the question. Doesn't mean SACWA can do it alone, because it's dependable. Your budget is very clear what it is. It's basically you're doing a lot of other work, but you were added on to, but not necessarily the budget implication is positive in that way. But then we need to get engaged the National Fuel Fund and other structures and say, how do we then affirm SACWA's commitment as the minister, for example, are able to give support, as you correctly said. I thought of just raising some of those things up front. But members, anything from your side? I've made certain assumptions also in this presentation, and hopefully I'm not too wrong. I know.
Thank you, Shepherdson. I'm also aware and a bit worried about the fact that what is said today is not actually different from what was said in the past. It seems like we're just running in circles, we're not moving forward. And the question I have here is, how does SACWA advantage learners in poor rural areas? And what mechanisms are actually used to assist rural people to access and utilize the advantages of SACWA? In how many poor rural areas is SACWA having a permanent presence? And the other question is, let's take a person who has been working for a court of law for about 10 or more years, and this person has acquired enough legal knowledge. Can this person be evaluated by SACWA and be issued with the relevant certificate? Lastly, SACWA spending 67% of its revenue on studying, is that really feasible for any person? Thank you.
I just want a clarity for, or maybe it's a comment. My question is to be in a form of comment. If you look at your strategic plan on the advantage, where you let point three, where you say that probably get sufficient financial support to deliver on this But the question for me is that what made you think that SACWA will be only to deliver when it has the fund? You want to tell me there are no other things that you can do without depending on funding. And then again, I I want us to talk about the target. On strategic objectives, I don't know about the page, but really say, initiate projects to monitor and evaluate education and training for continuous improvement quality improvement. On this one, I know we have a national monitoring and evaluation commission and I just want to find out from you what steps or initiatives do you take so that you can also link up with that the national monitoring commission. Because I think in future you have to you have to have links with that. The third one also you have said that's number six, maintain and further develop the national learners and social capital as a key national source of information. And what I'm looking for here as a target, because if you initiate to have a database for the students, surely you have to give yourself time. You have to estimate if you want to do it for 3 months or 1 year or 6 months, but you have to have a target to say on such and such a day, on this month, I want to collect all the students that are participating. At least it should be 100% of the students. But what I'm looking at also the target, because we need to be very clear about the target and the implementation, because of the COVID, we are going to go over time. And these are such things that we are going to be able to ask.
Thank you.
Thank you
for
this one.
I'm on the media instead of trying to estimate. I think somebody asked me, but I just want to check if there's a contact team of people who I don't have a chance to look at you, but I did not check the percentage versus the goods and services themselves, and even the transfer payment, added together. It's like there's nothing wrong with payments being good, because we don't want to get people running to other countries. But I'm taking if what really informs this ratio. I'm taking because it's like paying those who implement is more than the implementation itself. That's my other thing. And then on if we go back to medium term revenue estimate, there's no page here. The income, the tax revenue, there is nothing there. If we cannot estimate the tax revenue at the beginning of the year, is it not going to cause understanding or even overstanding? And is it not possible to estimate? Because these are estimates anyway. And there is something that we are still developing, and program one, that's a comprehensive national strategy, if I heard it correctly, being developed as we speak, if I got it correct. Now, how long will this development continue? Because we can have the whole period while this is being developed.
Thank you very much. The people in admission offices at universities tell me that students often just don't know what the choices are within universities between academic programs. And there also is clearly not enough information that students have about their choices, not only of academic programs, but also of universities. And so the whole issue of career guidance is really quite fundamental. And I think it's eroded over a long period of time and needs to be built up. So I just wanted to say that that's actually quite a fundamental part that we all need to put our heads and hearts together to pick work. The second point is that I think that the role of the minimal role of the state in relation to publicly financed universities is to A, give the money, and B, to test the academic quality of what's been offered. And so clearly TAQWA is part of the fundamental functions of the state. My own party believes that that's where it should stop. The ANC believes greater regulation, but it's a party difference. TAQWA performs a fundamental role, not a key role. So I just wanted to say that I don't think we're going in circles. I think we're actually making progress. And clearly, there's been development and traction from year to year on this question. My question to you is that there is no nationwide norm for how one assesses the quality of academic offerings. You know, can we put a measure to the quality of a degree in engineering from a given university as opposed to another? We don't have a system like that. Usually you would look at the employability of graduates. So if you have a medical degree from the University of Cape Town, you get snapped up. And people would just take that as a measure of quality. And if you get it to somewhere else, you don't, and so on and so forth. But the reason why that question is important, though, is when it comes to private universities, and if one is looking at state support for independent universities, say, the role of government is to, in fact, assess the quality of the academic degrees at a private university. And so I just wanted to hear what your thoughts are about that issue.
Any other questions? If there are no questions, I'll request the leadership of Dr. Peter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, probably the first point I would like to make is that we addressed the portfolio committee last year. I think it was in August, September last year. And in that address, the portfolio committee asked us to address kind of three things in broad terms. The first one was about the new ECCAS Act and the role of TAQWA and the role of the Quality Council. Secondly, also to the question was raised around the recognition of higher learning. And then the third area was the area of unscrupulous providers. Now, what we have done in terms of that presentation, when we outline what are the problems with regards to the recognition of higher learning that is in the system, we then went away and we had a serious kind of look, and we were saying that these were some of the systemic issues and so on. And then we formulated a strategic plan to deal with, some of the systemic things. And one of the issues that we were saying is that there is a need, for a particular body to really champion and push the recognition of prior learning as a key area for us moving forward. And that is what we have done in the strategic plan. We fought for the endorsement of the Minister of Higher Education in terms of being the body that will put together, a national strategy and bringing all the role players together because, of the different kinds of stuff. And this is what what we were saying in terms of the deliverables. So, it's the perception, in fact, we are just saying the same thing. I mean, I think, if one really thinks about what we were last time and the strategy that we put in place and wanting to move on this, very natural fact, what we're doing, this is what we're going to do for the next year. And we've identified kind of key areas that we need to address. So in other words, what I'm saying is that it's not the same thing in terms of where we were the last time. So, um, um, and
I think the chairperson rightly pointed out that one of the key things that we were saying about RCL is that, you know, there isn't any additional funding for it. And what the minister, in the meeting with the minister, you know, the minister clearly was saying that he will endorse us driving this, you know, the RCL and the national strategy around it. But more specifically also, that we deal specifically with the kinds of issues that, you know, one of the members, you know, raised in his work. Say, for example, if somebody, if there's a rural student or a person, in fact, that, you know, that has got a number of competencies and so on, that through the helpline, that, you know, people can follow in and we can actually, you know, do the counseling and so on and, you know, and work with a number of the other stakeholders to address, you know, exactly the kind of problem that, you know, that was raised. And in order to do that, again, what we need to do is to set up the infrastructure to do that. You know, we can't just go and say, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, and we don't have the infrastructure to do it. So, so in terms of the pilot project, we have set up the helpline. You know, we have recruited a number of staff members in order to deal with that. You know, because one of the most dangerous things, in fact, is if you say to the public, we will do X, Y, and Z, and when they fall in, and you don't have the infrastructure, you know, in actual fact, the complaint that will become post-political, you know, will be very high. So we must be able to deliver on what we are saying. And we are part, you know, in the discussion with the Minister of our Education, we said we actually need to have this additional funding in order to do this particular thing, you know, that we are wanting, you know, that we are saying is such a crucial aspect, you know, of what we need to do. So I really want to say it is not the same old story that we've made the last time. Similarly, Chair, in terms of the career advice service, we have put in a budget, you know, to the NFPAS, and in the meeting with the Minister of Higher Education, we were saying that, you know, we will certainly, or the DG will deal with that kind of issue with NFPAS. Because we are also talking about, if one looks at the scenario that our CFO has presented, in fact, that specific money for setting up this kind of career advice center, in fact, is not in that budget. You know, again, if I can remind, you know, members of the portfolio committee that we present three scenarios in terms of the budget. Now, the Minister of Education and Higher Education and Training would say, you know, we cannot sign off an unfunded budget. And hence, when you talk about scenario three, that is the kind of money that is available, and we cannot do things. In fact, if we are not able to get the budget for that, unless, you know, we are asked to say, look, go and raise additional funds and so on, and we don't have a problem, you know, in doing that, as it were. But, you know, so it's quite important that, you know, that I think that there should be a, you know, an appreciation for, you know, for the budget. Yeah, sure. You know, Mark just reminded, I think any budget should be the NSF, the National School Fund. Yeah, so, you know, Chairperson, in terms of the staffing, one of the key things in terms of the work that we do is that we, you know, we have got high level staff and the staff availability is quite an important thing. And in fact, if one looks at educational training systems in general, you know, quite a lot of money is spent on staffing and so on. So in terms of the kind of work that we've done, we actually did it exercise where we compared, you know, how much of our budget is spent on funding, on staffing across people working in theatre. And I think we are not out of that. In fact, you know, it is in the region of about between 60% and 70%. So we don't believe that, you know, it is, you know, just for people, out of this. In terms of targets, what I didn't do, I, you know, we did a summary of the key deliverables here. So we didn't go into the detail, but in fact, if one looks at the detailed budget in terms of the NRD target, on page 44 of the detailed strategic plan, we are saying here that one of the things that we will be doing is we will be setting up, particularly if it comes to private providers, we are busy with the Council on Higher Education to set up a database of private higher education institutions and the qualifications, and we are saying that, you know, in terms of that project, you know, we will continue with that project, and that we would also, at the end of the financial year, at least have 50% of all the private higher education institutions, their data loaded by, you know, by March 2011. So what I'm saying is, you know, the detail one can find, you know, within, you know, the details, one and so on. So from an oversight perspective, you know, it is very clear that the, you know, the portfolio committee can keep us, you know, to those particular targets that have been set up, you know, in terms of that. Chairperson, in terms of the question around the, you know, around program one and the question about how long, I mean, this is clearly, you know, a program and the deliverables is within, you know, the financial year. So by March, you know, 2011, we would have, you know, met, you know, all the things that we have set, you know, around that. So, you know, it is not you know, kind of never-ending thing that you're saying. I think the point that is raised about the importance of career guidance and the fact that, you know, given the fact that, you know, it is a new environment, there is a new NCF Act, and there's a whole range of new things. But I mean, I think, you know, as we would, I think, you know, I can't agree with this point more, that it is a critical thing that we need to do. And in fact, the various stakeholders must work together in terms of that. And hence, in the discussion with the minister, he was saying it's quite important that SACPA do take the lead, you know, in terms of moving forward in terms of that fundamental role. The question, you know, that is a question about, you know, the quality of, you know, of academic qualifications and so on. Now, there's a whole range of different factors, you know, that play a role in terms of employment, for example, you know, in terms of that. But, I mean, the key thing from our perspective is that, you know, the Council on Higher Education, you know, is responsible for the quality assurance, you know, of the educational training that happens, you know, within higher education. And I mean, in fact, you know, part of the quality assurance that they do is to visit, you know, to do site visits, to actually, you know, do extensive analysis, in fact, in terms of that. And I think possibly a way that we can continue the, you know, the discussion and the debate about how do you actually do the measurement, you know, would be, it would be useful, in fact, to, you know, to, you know, have a look at that and to make analysis so that, you know, as we go along, you know, we can certainly improve and find ways of improving, you know, how we do the quality assurance, you know, those programs. Chairperson, there's a number of questions relating to the budget that I'm now going to ask Mark to respond to.
Thanks very much, Chair. I think Joe did talk through the ratio of the personnel costs and travel costs. It's one of the things, actually, that our finance committee is also closely looking at and monitoring. We did do an exercise to benchmark our organisation against other organisations, and at this stage we are within that range. in terms of the remuneration, we do benchmark against the DSA rates. The other thing, in terms of the remuneration, there is some budget built in for you know, our broadbanding levels. So it's not to say that all of our staff will get broadband, but that is the incentive in terms of being able to perform and also show additional competencies in the workplace. Then, Chair, in terms of the question about on the medium-term revenue estimate, it's probably maybe just a bit of a misleading line to show the tax revenue is zero. SACWA is exempt from income tax. So So that's why all of the revenue that is not government funded, we do show under non-tax revenue. So there will be no income tax implications there for us. I think those were the ones on the budget check.
Thanks.
Chair, I ask a question on in how many rural communities does SACWA have permanent presence where people can move, there is SACWA, we can go there and we can get assistance, qualification and experience that we have. And one of the person who has been working a lot from Abada, the course for quite some time, but to be correct.
Yeah, Chair, I thought I'd answer the last question by saying that, you know, we have set up, you know, a helpline, and part of what that helpline is doing when people are phoning in, we are able to, you know, to listen exactly to the detail of what it is that they're saying, because this is there are complicated issues that need to be dealt with, and that each individual case is then dealt with specifically, and specific advice and counseling can be given to the person. You know, I thought I'd answer that. The issue specifically around, you know, where SACWA does have a presence. Chairperson, again, you know, a few years ago, not in the kind of, administration, one of the moves that SACWA has made is to actually try to establish regional offices. You know, we had an office in the Western Cape, that also served the Eastern Cape. And there were plans, in fact, to roll out provincial offices to the Northwest, and the Limpopo and so on. However, at that stage, the Minister of Education felt that, we shouldn't set up regional offices. And hence, in actual fact, we actually got money for rolling out the regional offices, from the Danes. And we had to give the money back and said, the policy, in fact, was about that, that we should just have one office. As it were. So what I'm saying is it's difficult. That was the situation then. I'm not saying it's the same situation now. And certainly, one of the things that we can explore, is again, to doing that. But the way in which we believe that we can reach, a number of communities and so on is through, having a dedicated helpline, but also to work with different providers in terms of providing information, whether it's got to do with career advice or with regard to RPL, that we then work in collaboration with a number of providers so people can, literally walk into those providers and that they can get, some of the vital information that is necessary for them. But we believe we can do that in collaboration with a number of providers.
Government cannot allocate them then in the basis of this. There is no proof that these people have the knowledge, including their family. I just wanted to know it's possible for me to also accredit these people. Very good long time. normally you are affected by spend because they must be able to are you able to accrue this report so that we can begin to have a better life, not just the labor of
spend? Thank you.
Recognition for what it is that they demonstrate.
well and so on. So what I'm saying is that again, it is possible, to do this. But one of the things that we have found, in terms of implementation, that there's been a number of difficulties in implementation. And, one of the things that we've done is we've reported, to the committee, in August last year, was there were some difficulties in implementation, and part of the research that we've been to find out what are some of the, why is it difficult for some, people to implement this. So the answer to the question is yes, it is possible to do it, but there's a number of things that we need to put in place in order to do so. Now, I think the question in terms of quality, there are debates in terms of what is quality and all of those kinds of things and so on. Now, I mean, the one way in which, I would like to address this is that in terms of the new NTF Act, there's been three quality councils that have been established by the Act. The Quality Council for the Council on Higher Education, the Quality Council for Trade and Occupation, and the Quality Council that deals with general and further education. And the way in which this thing works in fact is that people submit their programs, they submit who are the people that are presenting these programs, and so on. And in actual fact, the Quality Council go out, to investigate and to have a look and to do assessments and so on, and to be, and to make sure that that these providers meet the criteria that has been set by these particular Quality Council. But at the same time, we also know that quite a lot of work needs to be done, in terms of the improving the general quality, as it were. So, in the schooling sector, we for example know that one of the teachers that affects quality is the teaching, and that we actually need to get better teachers and so on. So, by answering in that, I'm not saying that there isn't any difficulty in so on. I mean, we're all aware of that.
Any other questions, comments? So if we don't have any questions, I think we have come to the end of this presentation. But our meeting will continue because on our agenda, I think we still have two items. And then after that, we will adjourn. But I would like to take this opportunity to thank the leadership of SACO for their presentation, which was very informative and also mind-provoking. Yes, I would like to thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Never thank you. It's your pleasure.
No, we still thank for the budget.
Okay.
Thank you, Jim.
Honourable members, our next item on the agenda, I think we are going to look at our program for the next term. And I hope many of you all have copies of that program so that we can deliberate on the